the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. We have a cram-packed one. Melinda Emerson is with us, the small biz lady, perhaps the number one entrepreneurial helper out there. And then the great Tom Ziegler is with us. You don't need any introduction for him. It's a cram-packed show. Here we go. I am so excited and honored to welcome back to the show Melinda Emerson. She is the small biz lady and has made an amazing career off of a pivot. And I'm going to start the conversation asking her about that pivot. She was working as a TV producer, had a very successful career, and switched to entrepreneurship. And again, that's the pivot we want to talk about, and became one of the, if not the, preeminent voices on helping people become small business leaders. She was the small biz lady at the New York Times for a while and is now totally out on her own. That reaches in so many ways, like an octopus. She's teaching, writing, podcast, all giving great events and speeches to big groups and stuff. And she's still, I think, the number one voice out there. She has an amazing Wednesday night live talk show, too. Is it Wednesday night?
It was on Twitter, but that's now my podcast, so I don't do it anymore.
All right. Oh, okay, great. Melinda, welcome. How you doing?
I can't complain, you know? I mean, no need to, right? Who wants to hear about that?
Well, I certainly have learned that no one will listen or care. So
That's it.
Yes. I feel like our society's lost a little bit of the ability to help other people and apologize and thank people. I think we've lost some of our basic niceties. You think?
Oh, yeah. No, I think that there is a snarky, mean culture in America right now that is just, it's just not good. It's not good Christian values. It's not what we are as Americans. We've always rooted for underdogs, and now it seems like the underdogs are getting stepped on.
Yes.
I don't like it. And I think small business owners are catching the brunt of it, you know, as the top employers in the country. Nobody cuts us any breaks, right? You know, let's give super rich people tax breaks, because that seems better. You know, it's like ridiculous.
It is.
So for me, as a person of faith, you know, I'm praying harder than I ever have. I'm praying for more people than I ever have. But I also believe entrepreneurship is the way out. The world is still waiting on a better mousetrap. And if you build that mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door, no matter where your door is. I love online marketing. I love AI. A lot of people are scared of AI. I actually love it. It has increased my personal productivity 200%. And I think everybody needs to figure out how to use it in some way to utilize their superpower faster.
All right. What are you doing on AI that's so productive? What tools have you discovered?
I do everything on AI. I first of all, nobody should be, you know, creating things themselves, you know, any written or social media content. It is ridiculous to really spend your time doing that. Obviously, you tweak it to make it sound like you. But if you build a brand guideline for your chat, first of all, you got to pay for whatever AI tool you're using. And then you got to teach it about you. You got to feed it your stuff and use it as a co-writer, you know, and then give it the scenario and let it go. And it is amazing. I mean, landing pages, sales funnels, outreach letters, research, content, course development, workbooks, worksheets, slide decks. I mean, it can do anything in seconds. and you just have to know how to prompt it the right way. And I think that's what a lot of people, you know, you can't give it a one sentence prompt and think it's going to produce something that's great. You got to give it more context. You got to tell it who it's for. You got to tell it its role. You got to tell it the goal of what you're trying to communicate, and then the tone that you want it to communicate. And my favorite tone in AI is sassy but practical, is what I always tell it.
Okay, and I like that.
And it sounds like me when it gives it back to me, and I love it.
Well, I think you said something so critical. We have to teach the AI about ourselves. And I hope everyone signs on so they're under their account, because it does start to remember your stuff and who you are and all of that. I love that. I've discovered some amazing use cases. Maybe my favorite so far is watch this video and give me the three most important quotes out of it. And it will return that in 5-6 seconds, even a 30-minute mm-hmm. video, it will watch in seconds. And so mm-hmm. I love that as well. Which platform are you using the most? GPT, Croc? Which one is your happy?
I use ChatGPT. I've tried the other ones. They make me a little crazy. I've tried Croc, and a lot of people swear by it, but I'm about, you know, Chat does a lot of stuff for me. Chat integrates with other tools, you know, like Canva. Chat even has an art and animation kind of app within it called Sora that I've started using a lot. If I need things that are, you know, images or, you know, short videos, animated videos, you can do them in seconds. You do have to pay for an upgrade if you want something longer than 10 seconds, but Sora is a pretty powerful tool as well. And they just rolled out the agentic, you know, small agents within ChatGPT too. So it's cool. I'm in the beta test of that. So yeah, I'm a super fan.
Well, I just have found more and more uses, but the thing is so daunting is you load it up and it's just a prompt, just a, you know, the little cursor, blink, blink, blink. What do you want me to do for you? And it's like, you know, a kid in the candy store. There's so many options. You don't know where to start. And, I like the idea of what you said, just teach it, load it up, all your stuff in there, and, tell it who you are. So I agree.
Yeah.
I teased your pivot. Let's go back in time and talk a little bit about being pregnant. You and your husband were having, got pregnant. And at that time you were building the very beginning of your small business. I think you mm-hmm. had a hard pregnancy. What happened?
Oh gosh. Well,
I don't mean about the pregnancy, but more about the book that came out of you being pregnant and all of that.
I was going to tell about all of it.
I don't need to hear about your preeclampsia. I don't want any of that. And no body fluid story.
Well, just suffices to say, you know, my business, I was about 7-8 years into my first business. It was a video production company, was my business that I started when I left television news. And, got pregnant with my son, ended up at 32 years old with a high risk pregnancy, and ended up on bed rest for 6 months. And this was before Wi-Fi was in people's houses, right? So I got sent home. I had offices in downtown Philadelphia, 9-10 people working for us. My former husband had quit his full-time job. So our whole family income was coming out of this business. And all of a sudden, me, chief cook, bottle washer, number one rainmaker, got sent home. And that was hard. No Wi-Fi, can't still work. You know, it was just really a lot. And for me, it was the first time I had stopped. It was the first time I had ever not woken up on go every day. And I started thinking about all the expensive mistakes I had made in my business. And man, the list was long. And I started writing them down, and eventually they became the body, the backbone of my best-selling book, Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months, which I ended up writing.
Third edition now, right?
Yeah. Third edition, 15 years. Gosh, it's been in print since 2010. But even that was crazy because, you know, but I need to back the story up a little bit. So I used those notes to write my book, Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months. But the reason why I wrote the book is because when I was home on bed rest, I realized how unhappy I was. I was unhappy in my business. I was unhappy in my marriage. And I had this brand new baby coming. And I was like, it was the first time in my life I had ever really not had a plan B or C. Like, I was like, gosh, what am I going to do? And I remember I went and had lunch with my pastor, and he was like, well, have you been praying about it? And you know how people ask you a rhetorical question that they kind of already know the answer to? That's what this was like. Because honestly, I was so low, I couldn't even pray about it. And I went home and I took his advice and I started praying. And within two and a half months, I got a vision and a dream three times from God to become America's number one small business expert. And that was when he reminded me of those notes I had taken when I was pregnant. You know, once I had the baby, I was busy trying to learn how to be a mom, which was a lot. But he was like, no, you, I already gave you an idea that I want you to materialize. And the first publisher I ever talked to, I didn't have an agent. I didn't have a book proposal. I did not even know what a book proposal was. But I had four chapters and a table of contents and a media kit. And I sent it to the first and only publisher I ever talked to. And they bought my book. And so this was before I became small business leader. No. So the original publisher of my book was Adams Media, And they were bought 2 years later by Simon & Schuster.
All right.
And so Simon & Schuster has been my publisher for the second and third editions of my book, which has sold over 100,000 copies worldwide in multiple languages. But yeah, I mean, it was, this whole thing was crazy. And I knew I couldn't run my business like I had been running it, because one of the things I realized when I was home on bed rest is that I had built a business that really couldn't run without me. I had had a bunch of doers in my business, but I had almost nobody thinking about how my business made money other than me. And that was the hardest, most expensive business lesson I ever learned. And I said to myself at that time, I wanted to write my book because I wanted to give other people a 3 to 4 year learning curve. Like, I wanted to tell them the hard parts so they could sidestep them if they could. And that was why I wrote Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months. And I think the reason why that book has had such staying power is because I told the truth about a bunch of dumb, expensive lessons that I had the opportunity to learn. And I think people appreciate the authenticity of it, I guess.
I think you and I are the only two people that got published with one letter out. You know, you pitched only Adams. I, with my first book, I only pitched McGraw-Hill, and they said yes within a week, and that was it.
Then basically the disaster started. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the other thing. So when I originally wrote my book, it was due to my publisher September 1st, 2008. Jim, do you remember what happened September 14th, 2008?
I had cereal for breakfast, I remember.
You don't remember the sky falling?
The financial crisis under Bush. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You don't remember people's 401ks becoming 10ks? Yeah. I mean, it was a nightmare. And my publisher called me and said, listen, thank you so much for being a first-time author that actually turned your book in on time, because that like never happens. But listen, we don't think anyone's thinking about entrepreneurship right now, so we're shelving your book for 18 months. So my book was originally supposed to come out top of 09. And they ended up not releasing my book until March of 2010.
Yeah, I think their thinking was backwards. As the economy gets worse, people move into entrepreneurship out of desperation. I think that, I mean, don't you think that's true?
100%. I was like, wait a minute. All these people losing their jobs, you don't think anyone's thinking about entrepreneurship right now? And they said, no. We want to bring your book out in a more favorable book environment. That was the term they used. And they shafted me. And, you know, the economy was so bad. My husband had lost his corporate job, and it wasn't like I had $10,000 to buy my book back from those people. So I had to wait. But the wait was what created my entire career.
How so?
Because the book wasn't coming out, right? I was like, I kind of had wound down my production company thinking I was about to become a professional speaker and go all over the country and blah, blah, blah. And so a friend of mine in the National Speakers Association said to me, listen, if I were you, I would start publicizing that book like it's coming out anyway. As a matter of fact, I would try to figure out this new social media thing everybody's starting to talk about. They say it's going to revolutionize business. And I was like, huh. And so I found a woman that was a publicist that knew as much as anyone knew about social media back then, which wasn't a lot, because you got to figure in 2008, Twitter was 1 year old. So that's how long ago this was. And so I went to this woman, her name was Kathy Larkin. And I said, look, this is what's going on. I got this book. It's not coming out for 18 months, but I really want to start building, some kind of audience for it. And she said to me, wait a minute, we got 18 months to build your author platform. She was giddy. She was excited. And I thought I was talking to a crazy person. Right. So she was like, I know what we're going to do. And I said, well, what is we going to do? She said, we're going to go out to Twitter and build your brand. And I remember saying to her, what is Twitter? Because at that point, I hadn't even seen it. I didn't even know what it was. And she said, trust me, this is going to be a good thing for you. So the day came for me to get my own Twitter account. I'm in front of my computer on their website, on the phone with her. I go to twitter.com and I put in Melinda Emerson, and I got this notice back. This name is already taken. And then what happened to me was I had to come up with a nickname on the spot. And we were like, nickname. And I was like, Mindy or Melly Mel. And she said, no, fool, you're not a rapper. I'm not going to give you a name like that. And so then all of a sudden we were brainstorming names, and she said, how about Small Biz Lady? And I was like, yeah, I think I can be her. That was the best branding thing that ever happened to me, because it immediately separated me from all the Tom, Dick, and whoever's out here saying that they are business coaches. And it was completely memorable, and it was kind of feminine, and people love it. And they do still to this day.
Yes. And then through all of the twists and twines and turns of life, what's your bread and butter now? I remember I was so impressed that before you were working with big corporations, telling them how to interact with small business owners, right? And how to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that still a big part of your
income? Very much so. Very much so. I mean, I've had over the last 17 years, I've worked with over 150 corporate brands that target small business owners.
Wow.
Everybody you've heard of. I mean, Verizon, Amazon, FedEx, Google, Chase, HP, you name it. There's nobody, Amazon, and there's nobody I haven't worked with. Because if you want to talk to small business, you got to come see the small business lady. So. Yeah,
I only found out about that law a couple of years ago. That was very impressive that you actually got that turned into law, federal law. I was so impressed when I saw that. Very impressive. So, how many income streams do you have now?
Six.
Okay, go through them with us, would you?
Okay, sure. So I still very much make money as a speaker. I make money selling my books and workbooks. I have an online school, Small Biz Lady University. I have a monthly membership site called Small Biz Lady Academy, which is just for women entrepreneurs. I also have my consulting practice, which is through our other company, Quintessence Group. We also develop education and training materials. So we actually license a lot of our courseware to workforce development organizations and universities on entrepreneurship and sales training. And I'm a coach. I have a coaching practice where I coach people one-on-one. I also certify Small Biz Lady coaches underneath my brand. So I have women that are coaches, but they want my intellectual property and all my teaching materials. And we have Small Biz Lady coaches as well.
Very impressive. What's your entrepreneurial thesis or summary or belief system? So, for example, I don't really believe in creativity anymore. I'm just going to copy your idea and do it better than you. I'm not interested in passion. Passion is for the bedroom and church, synagogue, mosque, and, you know, your family. And I don't think that you need to be passionate about the business. I don't really care. I'll sell any damn thing that's legal and kind of moral. And I'm not a big fan of risk. I don't think that entrepreneurs are really risky people. They do everything they can to reduce the risk. So that's sort of my little thesis of entrepreneurship. When I say entrepreneurship to you, what are the things that jump into your mind as ways to define it, important, you know, characteristics?
Well, I think that my thesis is my mission is to end small business failure. I believe all the best businesses start with a mission. The second thing I think is that if I had to do a business all over again today, I would buy an existing business and scale it, or I would do a franchise. I would never operationalize a service-based business ever again in my life. It's just too hard. It just takes too much time.
All right. I love that idea, especially with so many small businesses for sale right now.
Oh my gosh, there's a fire sale in America. All these baby boomers want out. So if you've got some cash, and it doesn't even take a lot of cash, because if you're buying an existing business that already has customers and revenue, guess what? You can borrow money to buy that business. You cannot borrow money to operationalize an unproven idea. But you could absolutely borrow money to buy a franchise if your credit is decent. And certainly if you're buying an existing business, a growing concern that has profit, that has customers, that has, you know, contracts, you can borrow money to buy that business. And that is what I would do if I had to do it all over again. I think at the end of the day, you have to focus on a real unique value proposition. And it has to be something that's not going to be easily duplicatable by your competitors. And that's the thing that I think people are missing. There's lots of people that do HR consulting. There's lots of people that do leadership training. There's lots of people that help people start podcasts. There's lots of people that sell whatever widget you sell. But there has to be something about how you do it. The customer experience, the intellectual capital, the signature systems and form, you know, there's got to be something that is unique to you that you can bottle and resell. And that's what it's about. It's about customers, but it's about recurring revenue. And how many different ways can you build revenue streams within your business?
My friend and co-author Chris Hanks started the entrepreneurship program at UGA, University of Georgia, and has been very successful there. And he has a lecture on how you can buy a business for zero money. And when you start getting loans from the current owner and all, you know, 20 different tricks that he uses, you really can buy a business with almost no money down these days. And so I'm glad you said that. We hadn't focused on that here on the show for quite a while. We're kind of running out of time, Melinda, even though we haven't gone anywhere this damn time thing. Let me ask one thing. Being a religious person, do you think that the coolest thing about entrepreneurship is that it utilizes the skills that God gave you better than anything else? It requires you to use every skill God gave you. And I think it's being an entrepreneur is just a really cool way of validating God's gifts to you. What are your thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that if God gives you a business idea, if he puts it in you like he put it in me, like he showed me what my calling was, he also put in you the strength to figure out what you need, attract the people you need to work for you. You know, when I first got started as a small business lady, I didn't have any money. There were two ladies that came along and worked for me for free for 1 year to help me stand that business.
Wow.
And
why did they do that?
Because they said God told them to come help me.
Wow.
That's what they said. And so what I know about this thing is that it is a faith walk. And it is a faith journey as much as it is in anything else. And you really have to believe in yourself and your idea with an unwavering commitment that other people do not understand. Now, that doesn't mean you chase bad ideas. That doesn't mean that after 3 years that business isn't making money, it's time to really think about a pivot. But I do believe that you can get your calling and you can turn your calling into revenue. And that's what we all need to be focused on. It's not about passion. It's about purpose. What is your purpose? If you figure out what your purpose is, you can monetize your purpose, and the world is your oyster.
All right. So I got into an argument with Simon Sinek on this. What if your purpose is just to make money to put food on the table? I don't want to hire. I'm just starting this pillow business to make money so that I don't starve to death and my kids want cars and stuff. And I think I can run a really great pillow business. So my purpose is to make money so I can have a happy life. Simon just hated that.
I can't. I'm with Simon Sinek on this. I call BS. I don't think if you are doing things just to make money, people can tell.
Well, what's wrong with that? I'm offering a great pillow that you think is a fair price.
Because people buy the story. People buy the why. They don't buy the what. They buy the why. People invest in my books and call me to do keynote speeches and stuff and coach with me because they believe in me. Okay, what I'm selling is real ancillary.
What I'm saying, though, you know, here's what I hate: people sitting on the sidelines because they don't know what their purpose is yet. And I argue that it may be in year three when you figure out what that business true purpose is. And
I think in year three, you figure out what the business model is, not the calling. Calling's got to come first before the business model. And I agree with you. It takes 3 years to kind of shake this stuff out, especially if you're starting from scratch with just an idea. But it's still got to be grounded in something, because otherwise you're going to want to blow your own brains out selling pillows. You don't care about pillows. If you aren't worried about people's sleep hygiene, if you don't have a story about how you were an insomniac until you got this pillow, if you don't have that, good luck selling the pillows.
But so many of those are fake. You know, the eBay whole Pez story, they made up in year five. You know, I don't know. I just find so many of those stories fake in retrospect.
I mean, I don't know what's fake and what's not. It's not for me to say. But what I know is that stories sell.
Okay.
There's got to be a story behind. Why did you start this pillow business?
Because I was almost about to lose my house. My wife was about to leave me. My kid looked at me like, "Dad, you're the biggest failure on earth." And those drove me to get up in the morning so that I could make my family proud and have enough money so we could go to Disney World. No?
No.
Okay.
Gotta make money cannot be the first answer. We all want to make money. This isn't a charity. But I don't lead with that. The reason why I do this is because my mission is to end small business failure. And I see, you know, the poor business practices like the cold and flu. It's everywhere.
I agree.
And what I'm trying to do is help people learn the stuff they have no idea they don't even know.
Well, that's what my purpose is. They have a lot to learn. So.
A lot to learn, because it's rough out here in these streets. Everybody can't do it. Everybody ain't built for it.
No, that's 100% right. We have blown 7 minutes past the time that we were allowed, Melinda. How do we find out more? Follow you online, get a copy of the books, all that.
Oh, yeah. Well, go to smallbizladyuniversity.com. You'll find everything you need. If you can't remember my name, Melinda Emerson, just Google Small Biz Lady and you will find me.
Fantastic. SmallBizLadyUniversity.com?
Yes, sir.
All right. Melinda, thank you so much for being with us, and we'd love to have you back in a year or so. I think this is your fourth time on the show. Does that sound about right?
I mean, I've been doing this a long time, Jim. I don't keep track.
Yeah. Well, we do, because when you're on five times, we give you a jacket, just like the Saturday Night Live people. So next time you get a green jacket.
I love it. Green's my favorite color.
I'll write that down. Melinda, thanks a lot, and we'd love to have you back. Talk soon.
Thank you, Jim.
And we'll be right back.
We are back. Again, thank you so much for listening to School for Startups Radio today. Very excited to welcome back to the show Tom Ziegler. He is one of those people that really needs no introduction. He is, of course, the son of Zig Ziegler and is now the CEO of Ziegler Inc. He joined the company back in 87 and worked in the warehouse and has worked his way up through sales management and now into the CEO position. He speaks around the world and continues to promote and share the Ziegler philosophy of all aspects of your life, business, sales, and personal development. He also hosts the Ziegler Show, which is one of the top ranked podcasts out there. He has a new book out called Choose to Win, Transform Your Life One Simple Choice at a Time. Tom, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Oh, it's great to be on. It's great to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. Congratulations on the book. You know, it's I would love to choose to win, but you see, my dad, he did this thing back to me a few years ago. You know, it wasn't anything bad, but he was really mean to me, and I have a chip on my shoulder now because of that. And I didn't do so well in college, you know, because of something that was beyond my control. So it's not really my fault. And, you know, I would like to choose to win, but the thing, everything is just not gone my way. And so it's not really up to me. It's not my fault. And so, you know, it's the system, Tom. It's the system.
Hey, well, you need to read this book because it was written for you. In fact, in the last book that we did with Dad called Born to Win, there was a story in the book of two identical twins. And one was serving like a 40-year prison sentence. And they asked him, they said, you know, how do you explain being in prison? And he said, how could I not be in prison? My father was an alcoholic, abusive person. He did everything he could to sabotage my life. And then they went and interviewed his twin brother. And they said, hey, you own 9 companies. You've given millions to nonprofits and charities. You're an icon in the community. What's the reason for your success? And he said, well, obviously it's my father. I've spent my whole life trying to do the exact opposite of him. And so here are two people out of the same environment, same parents, and they both made different choices. And really, that's what Choose to Win is about. We'd originally toyed with the idea of calling the book Live to Win. And then we realized that might be hard for some people because of the circumstances that we come out of. But, you know, sometimes as a consequence of bad decisions, but a lot of times beyond our control, Choose to Win puts you in the driver's seat. It allows you to understand that you have the power right now, no matter what's going on in your life, make a choice right now that will give you a better chance for success in the future.
You know, that's one of the things I love about a person switching to entrepreneurship at some point in their life is that it changes not only their career, but it changes the possibility basket, let's call it, of the children and the grandchildren, right? So here at our house, Tom, very similar to the way I'm sure you grew up, we run several different little businesses, and our kids, even the 3-year-old, helps us stuff envelopes and label things. And I think that when you define the legacy that way, I feel really good because I feel like we're teaching our child a lot of things by sitting there as a family stuffing envelopes. Your response?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I love, and I've got an illustration, it's kind of a metaphor. Here's the quote: a tree's fruitfulness depends on its rootfulness. And so as an entrepreneur, as somebody who just had a startup, you're bootstrapping, you're struggling, you know, but you're living your passion. The first thing I would like for you to do is draw a tree and then draw the fruit that you want on the tree. And so for me, my tree has dollar signs on it. My tree has peace of mind, good physical health, great family relationships. These are all the fruits that I want in my tree. Now, here's the key. In order for me to get those fruits, I've got to nourish the roots. And every tree in our life has 7 roots: the mental, the spiritual, the physical, the family, the financial, the personal, and the career. And so here's how you nourish the roots. Nourishment is simply positive habits. that nourish a root. So in your career, what are the habits that you can create in your life and that root that's going to produce the fruit that you want? And so that's really the subtitle of the book. You can transform your life one simple choice at a time. A habit is simply a choice made over and over again.
Again, we are speaking with Tom Ziegler about his new book, Choose to Win, Transform Your Life One Simple Choice at a Time. Tom, you went through the seven roots really fast. I'd like to go back through them and give me an example, please, of one simple step that I could choose in each of them so we can really understand this. Some of them I get really easily, right? So, for example, the third root, just for an example, is physical, right? And that's obvious. I could choose to drink less Coca-Cola and less junk, right? And drink more water infused with fruit, and I could exercise more. Am I on the right track here with, for example, physical?
Absolutely. You're on the right track. And I'll just start with a habit that applies to every route. And this is the number one habit that I learned from my dad, Zig Ziglar. And here's the habit: choose the right input. This is an extremely powerful habit because when you choose the right input, what you listen to, what you read, who you associate with, the places that you go, the things that you invest in, the seminars that you attend, the radio shows that you listen to, the podcasts that occupy your automobile university time, when you choose your input, it impacts your thinking. Your thinking and your believing go hand in hand, and action is soon to follow. And so the habit of right input can be applied to every single one of those seven roots. So mentally, what kind of input do I want to have? What kind of belief system? What kind of things do I want to set my sail to? Spiritually, the same thing. What principles and values do I want to build my life on? Physically, am I going to read about nutrition and health and so on? We can go all the way down the list. And so,
well, let's do. You went through the list so fast before. For you, it's second nature, but I want to go back. So we've talked about physical, and you just mentioned spiritual, but I want to go back to the first one, mental. Choosing my inputs wisely for the mental. Does that mean that I should stop reading Twitter from beginning to end every day? Because that's what I do, Tom. I just sit there and read Twitter every day. I find it so reaffirming of life and makes me just really think people are great, that Twitter place.
Yeah. So, boy, that's a great observation. Great question. One of my friends and kind of one of my mentors from a distance is Dan Miller, who wrote 48 Days to the Work You Love. And I was having dinner with him, and his grandson was there, Caleb Miller. And Caleb said, "Tom, how do you know if you have a bad habit?" So what you really asked was, how do I know if, you know, spending hours on Twitter is a bad habit? And so that's really a pretty deep question, because here's the reality. Unless you have a clearly defined dream, goal, or aspiration, unless you know where you're going, you don't know if it's a bad habit. So, for example, is smoking a bad habit? Well, if your goal is to get lung cancer, it's a great habit, right? So the first thing you've got to do is you've got to say, what's my goal? Do I want to grow my business by 50%? Do I want to travel the world, get in great physical shape, whatever it is? Then you step back and you say, will spending 3 hours a day on Twitter take me closer to or further from my goal? And if it's taking you further from your goal, then it's a bad habit. And so that's where we've got to have wisdom, because here's the reality. Most of our businesses today, they benefit from appropriate use of LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, depending on what kind of business we have. Is it a few minutes at a time? Is it a couple of times a day? Most of us can get a win from that. So a good habit can go to a bad habit very quickly. And so that's the way you measure it. Is all of this time taking me closer to or further from where I want to go?
All right. I alluded to it a minute ago. Let's dive in. Talk to me about the importance of a morning routine and help me understand what it should look like, right?
Okay. So one of the most common questions I get is, where do I start? And what do I do first? How do I get this thing rolling? How do I change a bad habit from a good habit? How do I transform my life one choice at a time? Besides the right input, which is the key, probably the most powerful thing you can do is what I call the perfect start. And this is something I invest at least 90 minutes a day in. But I didn't start that way. I started with about 10 minutes. And so for those of you who are like, oh, no, I don't have 90 minutes, don't worry. 10 minutes is fine. And all you do is you set aside the first 10 minutes of the day before you look at social media, before you check your text messages, before you look at email, and you carve those 10 minutes out. And the first steps are pretty simple. I like to have some positive input. Could be a quiet time, could be a devotional. That's what I do. I read something uplifting, and that's 3 or 4 minutes. And then you plan your day. And so in the book, we talk about the goal setting system. So you set your goals. Now what you do for 5 or 6 minutes is you work on your goals. You plan what you're going to accomplish that day. And you continue to do this every day. And what you'll find is that that 10 minutes turns into 12 minutes, turns into 15, turns into 20. And it becomes that sacred, most valuable time that you have. Now, one of the sayings that I love is, do you happen to life or does life happen to you? And you see, when we have that perfect start, when we take control of the first minutes of the day, we are now intentionally happening to life. And so mine grew. So now I have 5 minutes of just a quiet time. And then I read my devotionals. And then I go into my goal setting and planning. And then I do my middle, what I call the mental model. And this is kind of cool. This is where I have written down my phone conversations, my face-to-face conversations, my speeches and presentations. I might have 4 or 5 in a day when you add it all up. And I just spend 1 minute thinking through each one of them and how I want it to go. My vision for it. What are the challenges of the group? What are the personality styles of the people? What's the main message I need to get across? What are obstacles that might come up? And that little 1 minute exercise on each of these important things just dramatically impacts the productivity of my phone calls and meetings for the day. That whole section that I just said takes about 45 minutes when it's fully fleshed out, when you grow into it. The next 45 minutes I devote to my one thing. What's the one thing, the most important thing that I can get done that day? So that's how my 90 minutes is wrapped up. But I didn't start there. I grew into it.
In that last 45 minutes, it sounded like it included what I would call work, production, where you, the most important thing of the day, maybe is that getting my taxes done because it's the 13th of April?
It could be. It could be. You know, sometimes it's urgent. You know, sometimes it's time critical. In an ideal world, it's extremely important, but not urgent. It's the thing that if I get this thing done, it lifts all the boats in the harbor. It makes everything that I do more successful. And the other thing that I didn't get into is I start my perfect start every day between 5 and 5:30 in the morning. I get up early because I want to be ahead of the game before my email and my text and everything starts blowing up. A lot of people are like, I'm not a morning person. I can't do that. You can do this at any time of the day, but here's the challenge. You've got to do it every day. And so the easiest time and the way to get started is just set your clock 10 minutes early. So whatever time you normally get up, just get up 10 minutes early and start building this muscle. And you'll be amazed at the difference it makes.
Again, we are speaking with author and speaker Tom Ziegler about his new book, Choose to Win, Transform Your Life, One Simple Choice at a Time. I love the routine. I love all of that. And you're right. I couldn't. I'm one of those people who could never get up at 5:30. And so it won't work for me that way. But let me ask you this. I do almost all of the components, and I do them at different times of the day. Am I allowed to do that? Am I allowed to break it up into the perfect 15 minutes spread throughout the day by 6 different breaks?
You know, I think you would have to be the judge of that.
Okay, good answer. Yeah.
It would be the results that you get. And here's the thing, we're all on this journey called life, and all of us seek to have more fun, have more free time, get more done in less time. And so each of us have to figure out what works for you. For example, in the career chapter of Choose to Win, I've identified 50 different habits that you can use to increase your performance. And there's a simple little assessment that you can take where you rate yourself on these habits. These are all habits that are well known and proven to up your performance and the results that you get, and no matter what business you have. But what you need to work on is going to be different than me. So this assessment makes it easy. You just go through there, you measure yourself, and you go, ah, that's the one or two that I want to work on. And so the same thing here. I would definitely just focus on that perfect start. Identify those and just make sure you're being consistent and it's getting you the results that you want.
What is the worst financial decision or mistake that people are making?
Ah, well, there's a great quote by Dad, and he says this: the number one reason that people don't reach their goals is they trade what they want most for what they want now. And I mean, that is so powerful. So no matter what it is in life that you want to achieve, it's got to be so clear. It's got to be like a magnet just drawing you towards it. And in order to make that happen, you've got to look at all the decisions you make and ask yourself that question. Am I trading what I want most for what I want now? Financially, it's the same thing. You know, do we want a debt-free house? Do we want to live in freedom? And yet we look at our credit card bill and we've got all these impulse buys and we've got, you know, trips and steak dinners that we've been paying for 5 years. We got to get our priorities right and make our decisions based on what we really want, not what we want right now.
You know, I had a steak dinner that took me 5 years to digest. So shouldn't I pay for it for 5 years, Tom? Doesn't that seem to balance it? You know, if I'm still getting nutritional value for 5 years, I think paying for it on the 5-year plan makes sense.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right. I want to ask you about the big macro sense that we all have a greater why, a greater purpose, right? I run a chicken gizzard company. We make chicken parts, you know, for when you make like McDonald's chicken nuggets, the stuff that's left over that's not good enough to go into a McDonald's chicken nugget, that's what we deal with, right? And we're really good at that. But, you know, the whole purpose of that is just to pay the bills, Tom. We don't really care. You know, we have no value in the world. We're not adding any purpose. You know, our why is just to have enough money to go to Disney once a year. You understand my situation? There's no why in my life. Don't need why.
Yeah. So I'm just curious. Do you have any employees or is it just you?
Oh no, there's five of us. You know, I'm making this up, right? This is an imaginary example. There's five of us in my imaginary gizzard company. Yeah. It's called Cinco de Gizzards.
Yeah. So here's the reality, and this is a friend of mine, Rabbi Daniel Lappin. He says this. He says, when you solve a problem, you are often rewarded with certificates of appreciation. We call that money. And the more problems we solve, the more money we get. And here's what's really cool. This is the tie down. God is never happier with his children than when they're solving the problems of his other children. And so first and foremost, I'm sure that everybody who's listening to this has a business that solves a problem. And therefore, what you do has an incredible moral value to it, because the more problems we solve, the creator of the universe smiles. So one of my friends, I was actually coaching him, and he had an HVAC business. And he was thinking about buying a plumbing business. And I said, why do you want to buy a plumbing business? He said, well, here's the reality. My business is seasonal. Plumbing is year round. I can keep my people busy all year, which means I can pay them more and do more good. I go, do you like plumbing? He said, no, I don't like plumbing. I said, well, do you like HVAC? He said, no, I don't like HVAC either. But here's a guy who owns an HVAC business about to buy another business he doesn't like. And I said, Josh, what do you like? And he got this big smile and he said, well, Tom, God's gifted me with the ability to run a great business in this area of work. He said, my greatest joy is helping my people achieve their dreams. So I've created an environment where I help them grow and we set milestones and we help them get whatever their dream is. And by doing that, I reach my dream. And so ultimately, if we're in business for the right reason, if we're solving a problem, if we love developing our people and helping them reach their dreams, then that famous quote, you can have everything in life you want if you just help enough other people get what they want, that rings true.
You know, I'm pretty sure everything you just said is out of style now, and that the whole thing that you were describing, that whole capitalist thing, is I think it's been not only outlawed, but deemed immoral. Tom, did you not hear about all of this?
Yeah, I've always wondered, how can it be moral to take money from somebody against their will? I mean, capitalism is free will, isn't it?
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, I understand how to spend your money better than you do, Tom. That's what you don't understand. See, I'm much better at it than you are. You know, you want to do silly things, you know, and I'm going to do much better things with it. So that's the difference.
Yeah, you know, here's the reality. And this is why I love coming on a show like this. The future of our country, it's really on the backs and in the minds and in the hearts of small business owners. When the economy does good, it's because small business owners are winning. Big corporations don't grow that much. When the economy's hurting, it's because small business owners are hurting. So the economy rises and falls on the backs and the hearts and the minds of small business owners. And small business owners, when they transfer principles and values in the way to help other people and to serve other people by solving problems, when we build a business around honesty and integrity, and we provide an experience and a product or service that has value, that's the greatest impact we can have in our country. The government's not going to fix it. Education's not going to fix it. We know that the media is not going to fix it. So it's in big business, my goodness, they're in trouble. So it's up to us. We're the ones who got to do it. And it starts with the principles and values that we believe in.
Tom, how can we find out more? Get a copy of the book, follow you online, sir. And more importantly, how can we come see you speak? You know, you are making a career going from association to big company to Las Vegas event to Orlando Super Hotel. How can I, as an average person, just come and see you speak?
Well, this is kind of cool. Just go to Ziglar.com and get some of our free gifts, and that'll get you on our newsletter, and we'll send it to you. We're doing conferences here all the time. In fact, we have a conference coming up May 2nd and 3rd. Well, I guess we're not going to get that out in time.
That was last week, Tom, remember? You and I covered this before we went on the air, that was last week. We covered this.
I'm not the sharpest tack in the drawer. Yeah, so the way to reach it, we have conferences all the time.
Coming up later in the summer, you mean?
All the time. In fact, every 2 or 3 weeks, we have one. So, check us out at Ziglar.com. And my goodness, if you want the book, and I know you do, you just go to choosetowinbook.com. Choosetowinbook.com. You can get it from us there. You can get it from Audible. You can get it from Kindle, Amazon. All the links are right there. But the reason you want to go to that link is there's some free stuff when you tell us you bought the book. So free stuff is always good.
We love free stuff, Tom. Tom Ziglar, everybody. Sir, thank you so much for being with us. Great stuff, and hope you will come back soon.
We are out of time for today, but back tomorrow. Be safe, everyone. Take care. Bye now.